we're really excited to have Leo Barthelmess from Malta and the folks from the Vents Corporation with us to tell us about collars and managing cattle using collars and electronics. So with that, Leo, I will turn it over to you and let you get started.
Thank you, Chris and Holly and the Western Sustainability Exchange. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about a product that I'm pretty excited about. The Barthelmess Ranch, my brother and I are the primary managers, and our spouses contribute immensely to our success. We're southeast of Malta, Montana, 80 miles from Canada. We're a cow-calf operation, run a few stocker animals, and run replacement heifers over at the Matador Grass Bank. And we're primarily a grazing operation. We put up a very small amount of hay if we get a big weather event, and occasionally we get to harvest some grass seed for sale. So I guess, and I've had quite a long relationship with Vents Corporation. Todd Parker is there. Would you like to introduce yourself quickly, Todd, and we'll move on from there?
Sure. I'm Todd Parker. I'm Director of Product Development at Vents. I'm an engineer by training, not a cattleman at all. All of my skin in the game is earned over the past 3 years or so, and a fair bit of it on Barthelmess Ranch. So happy to be here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Can we go to slide 2, please?
Hang on, Leo. I wasn't even on the first one, so hang on.
Okay.
Oops. Of course, it was up.
Well, this technology is guaranteed to fail, right?
Oh, Lord. Okay, hang on. Let me find you.
So anyway, I can keep talking. My father moved the family here in 1964. My brother and I went to country school on the property and then went to high school in Malta. Back in the day, we had Hereford cattle, transitioned to Charolais cattle, transitioned to Red Angus is what we are managing right now. We start calving April 15th to avoid all of the nasty weather, or at least as much of it as we can, and market our calves in November, been using video auctions to do most of the marketing. And this year, nothing's the same this year. We've no rain or very little rain, grasshopper. So everything is, we're chasing fresh water and adequate grass all summer long, just keep moving cows. And Vince has been very helpful doing that. Are we up yet, Holly?
I haven't up. Can everybody see it?
No, not yet, Holly. I don't see it.
So I'll just read off my number 2 slide here. We manage about 20,000 acres. Half of it's lease land, federal and state. The other half is private. Run about 700 mother cows. Retain replacement heifers grazed at the Matador Grass Bank. We're now running a few stalker steers, some carryover animals that we thought we could add value to the last 2 years. We've not done that. We replaced the lack of sheep on the ranch with stalker steers. We happen to sit in a large floodplain surrounded by upland hills, rolling hills, and we have half the water in South Phillips County comes north through the property. So we manage 4 different drainages with some fairly large floodplains. And then, as I said, we take our replacement heifers over to the Matador Grass Bank. It's a TNC-owned property. There's 29 producers over there, and our replacement heifers are part of a 1,300-head common replacement herd where we share genetics and bulls in common. It's in fact, they're going to preg check those heifers tomorrow. The rest of the time, the cattle are retained on the property. So moving on to slide number 4. So my family came from Miles City, very traditional ranching operation, had a small number of pastures, put up hay all summer back in the 70s. And 80s, and then didn't move cattle a lot. Discovered Alan Savory and holistic resource management and started trying to up our game to increase our forage production out on range land. So now in the years since the 80s and studying holistic resource management, we have 38 permanent pastures on the ranch across the 20,000 acres. And with Advanced Product, we've subdivided and upwards of 80 pastures we've used in the last 2 years. So one of the things that piqued our curiosity about Vince when we found out about it, a little backstory, I have a friend in the wildlife sector, conservation community, and she said to me, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to have fences? And I said, yeah, it'd be great, but you and I'll never see it. Barely 2 years later, I find out about Vince, and we reached out to Vince through the Rancher Stewardship Alliance. And Todd was my first contact person. And we had an interview and a conversation. And the reason we're so excited about the Vince product is we have over 60 miles of barbed wire on the ranch and 15 miles of permanent electric fence. And the cost of replacing that infrastructure is going to be huge. And some of it's 80 years old as we speak. So the really pretty colorful map is a Vince product. The line drawing that's kind of dull, that's my product. So Vince, in order to manage all of the, created this wonderful little map for me. And so we have 38 permanent pastures, as I said before, and we've had up to 80 pastures last year, the last 2 years. So moving on to slide 5, please. So as I was saying, we've got a quarter to half a million dollars worth of aging infrastructure. At some point, it's going to have to be replaced. Through the Rancher Stewardship Alliance, a nonprofit that works with stakeholders in the area, we've become aware of the second largest wildlife migration pattern. The antelope migrate from southern Saskatchewan, Alberta to Miles City, and they come through Phillips and Valley County primarily to do that. So we are a funnel for wildlife migrations, and the less infrastructure we have in place, the better off it'll be for those animals, especially in deep snow. The sage chicken is a threatened bird in our region. We're one of the critical habitat areas for that. The less infrastructure we have for the sage chickens, the less fatalities we'll have on fences. And the Barthelmess Ranch's, you know, desired goal is to make a place for more species of animals comfortably. So if we can manage the cows and contribute to positive outcomes for antelope and sage chickens, those are wins for us. Slide 6, please. The Rancher Stewardship Alliance started in 2003, and this is the membership of the Conservation Committee that meets every month to distribute grant funding to local ranchers in a 3-county area of about 10 million acres for water development, for grass seedings on grass, and for fencing and watering CRP. And through our working of knowledge with the conservation community and these partners, we were able to get grant funding support to do the Vince project. Okay, slide 7. Todd, are you ready to take over?
I am. All right, I'm going to talk a bit about the technology and give everybody an overview. Why don't we jump down to the next slide, and I'll start in there. Again, just for everybody's benefit, I'm an engineer by training. Got my graduate degree in electrical engineering from University of Southern California. And been doing electronics and communications for an awful long time. I won't put a number of years on it. But so starting off, what is virtual fencing? From an engineering technical point of view, virtual fencing is a way to apply pressure to the cattle based upon their location. But what it really is a tool for cattle management. Much like fencing, a well-established technology, we can use a virtual fence to do containment of the animals within an area, like a paddock. We can use the virtual fence to do exclusion, keep animals outside of an area, perhaps a riparian zone. The virtual fencing is dynamic and programmable, which is really the heart of the power. And with that, we can do things like moving animals between different pastures, and where that all kind of wraps up is the ability to implement rotational grazing or ladder grazing or more progressive management of your land. With virtual fencing, we look to try and increase the productivity of your ranch. We try to implement techniques that allow for rangeland management, conservation, soil health, all of it basically bringing a new tool to the table that allow you to optimize your operation across a number of different factors. So let's go on down to the next slide. We'll get into some of the meat of it. So at the heart of the Vents solution is a collar. We call it a cattle rider. Contained within the collar is a GPS. And with that GPS, the location of the animal, we use a combination of sound and electronic pressure to control where that animal is located and to apply pressure to them. Again, to stay within a boundary, stay outside of an exclusion area, or even to move the animals and push them along, going from one paddock to the next. The collar implements a virtual fence line. You can think of it a lot like a single wire line in some senses. As the animals approach that line, at a certain distance, which is settable from that line, the animals will get a sound stimulus and encourage them to move away from that line. If they continue to go further to the virtual boundary, they will get a combination of sound and shock to again apply pressure to those animals to stay away from that boundary. Like other fencing technology, it is possible for the animals to break through. And if they do violate the whole line, they go out of bounds is what we say. But one of the other unique factors of the virtual fence, you know, in particular fences, is that the virtual fence line is a one-way gate. The pressure is on the animals to stay within the boundary. If they do happen to escape, they do not get pressure on the way back in. And because of that, you are allowed to set up things like a ladder graze or rotational graze, and we'll probably go through an example that we did on Leo's property here in a little while. The collars are designed to operate a broad range of animal sizes. This year, we've gone on calves as well as bulls. The vast majority of the animals that we're on are cows and, you know, adult and young adult cows ranging from 500 to 1,300 pounds. Let's go to the next slide. Another part of the solution is a communications system. We have a base station, which provides that communication to the collars. What that allows you to do is it provides a communication bridge between the collars and the internet. This communication bridge lets us receive location data from all of the collars. So now you know where the animals are and have been. And it also lets you program new virtual fence lines down into the collars. It's important to note that once a collar is programmed with a virtual fence line, it does not need to have communication to the outside world in order to apply pressure to the animal. It is fully autonomous. And in that regard, you do not have to have perfect communications to the collars all of the time in order to manage your cattle and manage your land. The towers themselves, they will provide a broad range of coverage. We have 5 towers on Leo's ranch covering his 20,000 acres that he manages, plus a bunch more that goes outside his property, including his neighbors. Each of those towers talks to the internet, typically over a cellular phone type of connection. And so the towers will talk to the internet. The collars talk to the towers, so you don't need cell coverage across your entire property, just typically where we'll put up those communication towers. And where we do put those up from a radio point of view, they'll go up typically on a hilltop in order to provide the best coverage to the collars across your property. Let's go on to the next slide. Last piece of the technology is a herd manager. This is a web-based application. What that means is you go to Herd Manager on your internet browser, much like you would go to your bank, you know, or Costco or online shopping. It is a web page. It allows you to visualize your ranch through the use of landmarks. You can see Leo's ranch here that we've drawn up on Herd Manager, identifying all of his physical pastures. We can visualize where the animals are located on the property and look at all of the historical data as to where those animals have been and how they have grazed across the seasons. This tool also lets you create and manage the herds of animals, create and manage the virtual fences. And this is a good time to say the collars themselves can contain multiple virtual fences, up to 16, which can be programmed entirely independent of one another, and they can be set up on a schedule. And so using that, we have done things like create a rotational graze, and in Leo's instance, created a ladder grazing system where we've pre-programmed an entire series of steps in the ladder graze over the course of 5 or 6 weeks. I think we did on the one earlier in the spring, Leo, and each of those virtual fence lines turned on and off in order to implement that ladder graze. So an awful lot of automation to allow you to optimize the labor on your property, in addition to the power of being able to put virtual fence lines wherever you want. Let's go down to the next slide. So I'll go over this one, Leo, and then I think we'll be shifting to you. You know, we've done a lot of work with Leo starting in 2019. We've done 2 seasons of winter grazing, 2 seasons of spring grazing. We're, you know, at the tail end of our spring graze, summer graze for this year right now. Done a lot of work on putting Leo's cattle on grass that they weren't necessarily used to going on. I'm sure Leo will talk about that. And then this year we've done more and more progressive use of the virtual fencing and the flexible nature of being able to schedule things. We've done a couple of different ladder grazes, for instance. And with that, I think we transition to back to you, Leo.
Hey, thank you, Todd. So we're on slide 13. All right, thank you. So when we implemented the program in November of 19, collared the cows, we do a lot of winter grazing here because typically we're not heavily covered with snow. A lot of opportunity to graze most of the winter. And what this ranch in this region of Phillips County, there is a lot of residual crested wheatgrass from the homestead era and the reseeding of that program when the homesteader failed because of drought and the economy. So we have a lot of crested wheatgrass on the property. And subsequently, because our pastures were too big and we couldn't achieve stock density, we had a lot of decadent forage. And we have a lot of water sources on the ranch, but some of them are 1.5 miles. Some of the perimeters of the fences are 1.5 miles from our water sources. So by grazing in the winter and using snow as a water source, we were able to target the crested wheatgrass and supplement the cows at their lowest nutritional point and encourage them to eat old and decadent forage with the hopes of increasing the forage quantity and quality the following spring and summer. So the winter of 19 and 20, we primarily targeted crested wheatgrass and outlying corners of pastures that normally don't get grazed, and tried to leave the recovered grasses around the water source for the following year. And that worked very well. And all of these red lines all over this ranch was the first year's vents line from 2019 and 2020. So I don't remember exactly how many. I think Todd referenced 28 kilometers of fence that we built from my computer over a period of time. We subdivided a lot. We monitored the grazing. We tried a number of different strategies. And I've been reluctant to really push on the cows. I didn't want them to get in a situation where they ignored the vents line. And then it's a bit uncomfortable for me to go from having some management ability to the ability to micromanage grazing. That's been a learning curve all of its own. Can we go on to pasture 14, please? So this was our initial offering in November 2019. We collared the cows at the little red dot on the left-hand side of the screen, and then we turned them out, and Todd, through herd manager, built a training fence on the upper part of the screen there. And we turned the cows out, and that training fence was along a barbed wire fence. And the cows wanted to go north, the upper portion of the screen. And as they approached that barbed wire fence, they started to capture some of the noise and electronic incentives. And it only took like 2 days, and we very nearly had them all trained. I mean, by 5 days, we were 95% compliant, 7 days. So it worked well. Despite what we think sometimes of them cows, they are very intelligent animals. 15, please. So with following a successful training of the cow, we started building other pastures. And part of our economics of winter grading, we want to harvest grass that's far away from the water sources in the wintertime. And we wanted to target old decadent forage with a protein supplement. Hay's expensive all the time. It's extraordinarily expensive this year, as everyone knows. So we're glad we were able to get 2 years of grazing under our belt before this occurred. So with the utilization of unutilized forage, that left more grass available in the spring closer to water. We figure our cost for grazing a cow on pasture land at 60 cents a day, and to feed hay at $2 a day at $100 a ton. So the economics are fairly good for us, and maybe for many other ranchers too. Next slide, please.
Hey, Leo, can I ask a quick question on that?
Please do.
Sorry to interrupt you, but is that 60 cents given the cost of moving electric fence, or does that include the vents cost? And then what is the $2 at $100 a ton hay?
We figure it costs 60 cents a day to graze our cattle, counting the cost of supplement and delivering the supplement. That isn't even a fence comparison. That's just the feed costs and a reasonable return on our land investment. And the $2 a day is 30 pounds a day at $100 a ton plus tractor time to go feed them. So, you know, there's a pretty substantial differentiation between grazing out and feeding hay. So those are just the rough numbers that we use when we're figuring stuff with a crayon here at home.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
You bet. So we're on slide 16. Turns out cows have institutional memory. They want to be where they want to be on a certain week of the year, whether it's in November, they want to be down along the creek in the riparian areas. So they took some offense at being forced back out into the prairie lands. And so some of those cows really were offended to have to go away from the historical grazing area. So that is not something I accounted for when we got into this project, but cows have memory and they want to be in certain places. And so some of them challenged the product, the vents lines, but for the most part, they were well-behaved and accomplished what we needed them to. Again, with grazing and using snow as a water source, we were able to target areas of the ranch, and every ranch has them that I've been on, has areas that never get grazed and it's old and gray and decadent. And so, you know, we could supplement the cows in their first trimester, maybe second trimester of pregnancy, and encourage them to harvest a lot of that old decadent grass. And not only do the cows benefit the following year from an increased nutritional value of regrowth grass, but we've also seen antelope target some of those areas we grazed. So we work with their institutional memory. Todd works with us to get us the pasture changes quickly, but it generally takes maybe 2 to 12 hours to get all of the collars programmed. So we're always trying to think out a week or 2 weeks out. So it has worked, and it worked well for us. So moving on to slide 17, but we have found great value in winter grazing. We have noticed in the second year, when we came around the following spring after the first winter, the cows were actually grazing further away from water and targeting more grass plants that had previously been old and decadent. And by increasing the stock density, which is, you know, basically the real goal is to increase the stock density, we trampled a bunch of that old decadent grass into the ground and it broke out very easily in the winter time. So we put that decadent forage down onto the soil so we can improve our soil structure and biology. So you're only increasing your grass harvest for intake by a percentage, but another real benefit is you're also feeding the soil by breaking off that old forage and putting it onto the ground where it can do some good and help retain water and shelter the. We're already on a second version of collars with the Vents product. Pictured are the original versions that we used, and they work fairly well. We have some retention issues over a period of time. We'll lose 10, 15% of the collars will come off. You know, cows get to fighting or they've got an itch and they'll rub on a tree or a cut bank. So that's an ongoing issue. But Todd's kind enough to give me a map fairly often, and GPS is all of the collars that are missing. So we pick them up as we're out monitoring and moving cattle. The herd manager initially was a bit of a struggle to work with, but it's getting a lot better now. And there's some pretty good videos working with user group on the internet. There's some guys that have really dove into to helping us understand how the herd manager works. And Todd continues to make improvements in that. And the geometry and GPS accuracy are not always intuitive. Once in a while, like in some of the areas on the property, you don't have immediate coverage. But in our biggest dead zone on the ranch, a month ago, Todd was able to program the collars, and it only took about 8 hours, and most of them were collared. So even though it says they can't get signal, apparently they do. Battery life, that is an ongoing challenge. The new version of collars, the batteries are much improved and they're replaceable at the ranch versus having to send them away to get them refurbished. It's an ongoing thing. I remember how big the first cell phones were back in the 90s versus what we have now. So I anticipate a lot of improvement in the near future. And it's a very functional product now, but there's always room for improvement. Are you up, Todd?
Sure. All right, I'm gonna click play here on a little demo. We'll see how well this works for everybody, depending upon your internet connection. This is an animation of a ladder graze we did this past spring. Here the animals are starting off on rotation one in the northern portion of this pasture. Virtual fencing is not perfect. Not everybody gets contained, but for the most part, animals are contained. And this ladder graze here was designed fundamentally around the water available, with one pond here up in the northern section. The animals were contained up in that northern section. And then this fence line here was dropped, and then the animals went down to the fresh grass, but were able to go back up for this water. And then the same thing's going to happen here in just a few minutes, where the second rung is going to drop, and then the animals move down to that next section. And what we've got going on here, I'm going to pause this to talk a bit. And so you can see here multiple virtual fences. We call this rotation one line here, rotation two line here, and down here is rotation three. And the animals started off, they were contained up here in rotation one for several days. And then the collars were programmed to disable this virtual fence line to allow the animals to go south. And that's what they did. And the animals were drawn just from the feed pressure. The collars didn't push them, but the animals, once they realized that that virtual fence line was down, they moved down to the fresh grass, as you could see. And then the same thing happened as they went down to rotation three. And you can also see how the animals kind of went back up for water and then came back down to the fresh feed. And then with that, we were essentially able to set up a ladder graze on this entire western section of this pasture. And then just a little bit more in the story here, we did these first three or four rotations, things were looking pretty good. And then Leo got a hold of me and said the water situation had changed. and we had to change the schedule on things and then eventually accelerate and allow these animals to go elsewhere on the property. And that was a very good illustration of the flexibility of this whole system. We were able to make those adjustments on the fly. It does take a little bit of time for the communications to happen, like Leo had mentioned, 2 to 12 hours types of numbers to get everything updated. But given what we were trying to do, that was plenty of time to take Leo's, you know, on-site observations as to what was going on with the feed and what was going on with the water to be able to adjust this ladder graze and then complete the rest of the rotations, which you don't necessarily see here, but we basically kind of jumped all the way down. And that's what I've got to share. And I think we can go to questions.
Thank you both. I guess if you want, everyone, you could just unmute yourself and jump in. If you want to use the reactions button at the bottom and raise your hand, then we can call on you and unmute you. I guess we've got a lot of folks on here, so just be patient and we'll try to get.
Hey guys, this is Tyrell Obrecht. Chris, do you care if I jump in?
I can hear you, Ty. Go ahead.
Leo, these questions are for you. I'd like to know how the collars and this type of management benefited you on a year like this. You know, how is your destocking situation or stockpiled forage looking compared to a, you know, conventional graze, I guess? And then my other question, you know, on a average year of precipitation, whatever that means these days, what type of increase in carrying capacity do you think are possible?
Okay, yes, a couple of questions there. So the first thing that occurred this year with the water stress that we're going through, reservoirs or water sources that are very low and some that were potentially going to go dry, we inventoried all them and took water samples, and then we managed the grazing around those water sources rather than let the cows graze on a larger pasture. We were duplicating the ladder graze that Todd just illustrated around the critically short waters portions so that we could harvest high quality forage there and leave the grass where there was season long water till later in the year. And we did that, and we had pretty good strategy doing that. We really targeted places that we confined the cows to a very small area around the good water. When I talk small area, I mean they weren't going hungry or anything, but and then we left the outlying areas again, so hopefully we'll get some snow and can go back out there and graze. We were able to find leases close to the property, and half the cows are gone off the property. So, I mean, that is going to carry us through the year without having to buy a lot of hay. So that's one of the strategies that we're managing the water with the vents product and making sure they graze small areas around those water sources that are viable and leaving the other stuff later or able to upgrade their nutrition as we change ladder pastures. I guess, you know, the economics, you kind of referenced that a little bit. There's a lot of people in the grazing industry encourage us to change season of use on our pastures. And logistically, most ranches, that's kind of difficult to do. But with the Vance product, we could potentially, and we're implementing that, we could potentially graze half of a pasture 1 year and the second half another year and alternate years now. And so we can add another tool to our toolbox as far as alternating seasons of use or time of use for different pastures around the ranch, which, you know, with even with temporary electric fence at the size of the landscape we work in, it is pretty labor intensive. And so I guess the Vents product is going to allow us to go from 38 permanent pastures to, you know, 100 or more. And potentially at some point in time in the future, we will only be grazing half the ranch, even though we may be in every pasture every year. We may only graze half those pastures around water sources, depending on quantity and quality of water. Did that help, Tyrell?
Yeah, that was good. And then my other question was, and I'm not holding the gun to your head, but on a more normal precip year, is it out of the question to say you know, 20-30% increase in carrying capacity by this type of managed grazing?
I'm not going to go down to a percentage, but what I see happening is we, because we have a partner in the federal government on these grazing properties, and we honor their requirements and requests for grazing pressure, I think what's going to happen, how this is going to play out, is we are going to build a stockpile of forage that will get us another year into a drought, that when this occurs again, we'll graze portions of the ranch every other year. We can put a lot more pressure on our private property with this product, and maybe we will, you know, I just anticipate us doing a better job of grazing the private ground in our grazing resources. So I think it's going to be a combination of things. I know we've grown a lot more grass with the change of our subdividing our pastures with hard boundaries. And that's part of what's created the decadent forage. We have a lot more residual forage than we did when I grew up in the 70s and 80s. So I think we're just going to continue to do that. We're going to increase the rest periods, going to increase the stock density, try and shrink the amount of bare ground, incorporate residual cover to the soil. I mean, there's just an untold amount of benefits that are already occurring at the ranch.
So Jim Spinner has a question. He said, what experience in rough terrain does Vents have?
So we are right now actively doing virtual fencing in the Rocky Mountain region outside of Vail in Eagle, Colorado. That is probably the hardest terrain we've been in, and we're working with BLM there. And part of their story for us was, hey, if you guys can make it work here, you can make it work anywhere. So we've got base station sites. Actually, my background in this Zoom is a Colorado BLM site that's at probably 8,500 feet. So it works well in rough terrain. And again, the collars themselves, once they are programmed, they are standalone in nature, and they do not have to have communications with the tower. And that's really probably a key aspect of our success in the rough terrain, because it's hard to get perfect communication everywhere. But we've got sufficient communication to be able to program those collars and implement virtual fencing, you know, in that area. And hopefully that helps.
Carrie, do you want to ask your questions?
I see her questions in the chat. I can just jump in if you like.
Go for it.
All right. Battery life. So battery life for the collars varies with how you use them. And the more progressive you wish to graze the animals, the more power you will consume. And so in a situation where you're doing an intensive rotational grazing situation, where you're doing animal moves, you know, every couple of days, the battery life is on the order of 3 to 4 months. In situations where you are less progressive, something closer to what Leo is doing, where we're moving every week or 10 days, battery life is on the order of 6 to 12 months. And again, depends upon the use cases and how much pressure you're applying to the animals. And we're always enhancing the technology, and battery life is definitely key for us. You know, on the last thing to state on that, in the broader areas, we do a lot of work in Australia as well, much larger pastures and different sorts of use cases in terms of how the collar gets used, but we're targeting 12 to 18 months of battery life in those sorts of situations. And the reason we're doing that is we're trying to match up with how ranch operations work. And Australia, again, the extreme example, those animals come into the corrals, the barn once a year. And that collar needs to operate for that entire season. In other operations, cow-calf, like a Leo situation, we have opportunity basically twice a year to be able to, you know, freshen up batteries on his property. Next question from Carrie: does 100% of the herd need to be collared, or is there enough aspect where they stick together? So we like to target 100% of the herd, collaring of 100% of the herd. Because the collars themselves are not yet perfect, Leo had mentioned that we do get some collar loss. You know, the collars are designed from a safety point of view to break off the animal if they do get hung up on a tree. And so we use that 100% of the herd collaring basically to leverage, again, that herd mentality. Not all of the collars need to be functional in order for the herd to operate, you know, as a unit. But we don't recommend only partially collaring, you know, your herd. And then last question from Carrie was the cost. You know, our baseline cost right now, the collars are offered as a service. So you don't have to buy the collars themselves. They are $35 per year per animal as a baseline. That is, you know, varies depend upon the size of the operation and whatnot, but that's a number to start with. And then the communications towers themselves are also part of the cost. Right now, those are generally purchased either by the rancher or in some cases, we have federal entities are subsidizing those. And the cost of the base station is $10,000 to $12,000, depending upon how much help you want in installing it. And I'll stop there and let you solicit the next question. And I can see Simon's got a question as well as Bill.
Go ahead, Simon, if you want to ask your question. If not, we can just have him answer it.
I think I see the question, and Simon was asking, what is the timeline for commercialization and wider availability? You know, we are actually, you know, in the midst of our commercial release right now. We've got a number of properties that are doing virtual fencing with us, probably on the order of, I think, 15 ranches are working with us right now. And we've got a number of folks that are coming on board in the fall and the spring. It is early days for vents, and you know, the technology is evolving. The technology is becoming more and more available. Like a lot of industries, we are also facing challenges associated with COVID and the so-called supply chain. Our ability to buy materials and deliver means, you know, getting back to the heart of the answer, you know, Simon, is you know, we're engaging with customers right now for work potentially to start in the fall. But we're really looking to load up for our next round of customer engagements in the late winter, springtime timeframe.
Sticking a while with these costs. So Todd, looking at the $35 for the collars, and then you mentioned $12,000 for the system to operate. And obviously scale seems to play an issue here. If I think I picked up, Leo, were you operating with like 400 plus animals, or is there more animals involved here?
We're running, we collared 450 last November or last spring.
So if you're running 400 or 1,000 and that baseline stuff to allow all the electronics to work, that would lower the cost. But my rough numbers showed that you were probably, it's probably costing about 20 cents a day for you to do, looking at the 12,000 and the 35 for the collars, but I could be wrong. But I was just trying to, I was curious just what the base kind of daily cost, just as we look at all these other things like feed and everything. So then the other thing, and those things that you were seeing improvements or wanted to see improvements in, you know, like bare ground and stock density and whatever. So are you formally monitoring those indicators, or what indicators are you most interested in monitoring, and how are you monitoring those over time to really make the case for this practice?
We have a number of transects on the ranch that we're monitoring. They've been in place for 10 years, but you know, they're a bit cumbersome. So I've been actually researching some apps on the internet, listening to some podcasts to find something that was a bit more functional and something that we could implement a lot more of, you know, some eyeball assessments that would be relevant to the what's going on out there. We've only been using the Vents product and the increased stock densities for 2 years, but there are some very casual, you know, good news and improvements. I think, you know, we're seeing more material on the ground and a lot less of wolfy plants in the crested wheatgrass, residual crested wheatgrass. So, but empirical evidence, I don't have enough.
You're aware of the range land analysis program with NRCS. I mean, that is turning into be, you know, an excellent tool that doesn't cost you anything and shows trends over time going back all the way 40 years ago. So even though yes. we do a lot of other monitoring, that can really show trend in those things you're talking about without costing you anything. I could do it for your entire ranch.
Yeah, inquiring into the utilization of those products, because to really assess what's going on out there would be more expensive than the callers. If, you know, so we need to find some ways to really monitor what's going on, because as our range sites change over time, we have to be able to change with it. And, you know, what's working, you know, we need to do more of what's working and less of what's not. And without some kind of monitoring protocol, those are difficult decisions to make.
Someone showed you how you could plug into that program and dial in your exact acreage, and you could see a trend on bare ground for the last 40 years, and it won't cost you a cent. So,
well, that's good. I'm gonna have to get. Yeah. So you're gonna have to come show me how to do that.
Right, it's kind of cool. Yeah. Oh, I guess that's just the monitoring. Oh, and what kind of stock density you're actually shooting for, you know, with this?
Well, in the latter Gray's illustration that Todd demonstrated there, we started out with 450 head on 250 acres. And kept them there for 5 days. Then we give them another 90 acres and kept them for 2 days, gave them another 90 acres. And, you know, that wasn't really, well, that was pretty high stock density for us. That was double or triple what we can get with what we have, you know, but there was never any danger of them being out of grass or eating all the grass. But I've been really reluctant to dial that in because I don't want to consume all the battery and I don't want to elevate their anxiety any more than I have. And there has been some increased awareness in the cows themselves and their behaviors. You can see some heightened sense of caution. Mm-hmm. They aren't wild or anything, but they definitely are looking for that boundary when they're grazing. So we're just kind of easing into it. Cause like I said earlier in the presentation, to go from managing 3 weeks or a month at a time to having the ability to manage half days or days, that's a lot of responsibility.
That's great. So what actually are your permanent units? How big are they?
Anywhere from the largest one is 4,000 acres. One's 3,000 acres. A lot of them are like 1,900, 1,700 acres. And there's over 50 water sources, pits and reservoirs scattered across that entire range. So we're just kind of using water as a starting point for that ladder graze system. And so what my intention is, like Todd demonstrated, so we had that 250 acre block, put the cows in there, and then we give them 90 acres, and then there was another water source to the south. Todd referenced that too. It didn't last as long as we were hoping, so then once we get to a new water source, then we can build a back fence to keep them from going back and regrazing the new growth. So, you know, we're trying a lot of different strategies.
I'm sure you're gonna, just like anything else, you'll get better with practice. But, you know, that's interesting when you're talking about 3,000, 4,000, 1,000 acre units. I think scale is a big issue with this tool. You know, when we're looking at our place with half section units, you know, it becomes, you know, different tools for different places, different situations. But boy, if I had a place like yours with those kind of sizes, this sounds like an excellent tool. One last question. It's like, so when you're calving, do you use this while you're calving?
That was a 750 acre pasture, permanent pasture. And we subdivided it three times and had cattle in there for 20 days, 15 days. And we just, the vents does not bother the cows. I mean, we had 20% of the cows calve out inside that pasture, and it didn't bother them at all.
Cool. I guess I had one last. So that, with your goal of like resting half your ranch using this tool, that's a great objective. I mean, you're obviously going to create a lot of stockpiled feed if you can pull that off. That's pretty cool.
That's what I'm hoping to do, is have that stockpiled ready.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. Thanks for the time for the questions.
Go ahead, Terry. I see your hands up.
Well, Leo, I was curious, is this eventually replacing your traditional fences, your barbed wire and your electrical, or is it running in tandem with, or how are you doing that? Are you completely getting rid of your barbed wire and the electric fences?
I will never pull a fence until it's wore out, irregardless of whether I need it or not, because maybe the technology won't be available 20 years from now. I don't know that, but as these internal fences age out, we'll probably not replace them. We'll just pull them and leave them out. But as long as they're functional, we'll use them. And, you know, I like the technology and I believe in the technology, but I certainly would not depend on it to keep the cows out of an alfalfa field. And, you know, so that could be a bit disastrous, or somebody's grain field. So we're going to keep those fences in until they're no longer of value, and then we'll pull them. I just don't intend to build new fences at all. So this technology is going to replace a lot of projected permanent electric fence that we were looking at. And with advanced technology, we don't have to put that fence in now.
Okay. And you think that as far as you can tell, the cost of doing so, I mean, you wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't worth it, right? I mean, obviously the technology is going to be the same amount or less cost than putting that electric fence in.
When you figure the cost of the fence and the cost of the maintenance and the infinite adjustability of vents, 1 year, you know, I have these goals in mind or the vision, the way things should look. And when after I build a vents and it didn't work out quite the way I thought it would be, well, I can change it. Only takes a couple minutes, you know, versus you spend a day or 2 days putting in a mile of fence. You're not going to pull that out just because you made a mistake. So, you know, the infinite versatility of the product to change the boundaries, that's a huge deal. And I don't think I've even begun to recognize how big of a deal that is.
That's great. Thank you.
I see Carrie had another question, and I think you answered it, but are the collars rechargeable?
No, they are not. The batteries are disposable. And the reason for that is essentially the energy density and the size of the batteries. If we were to use a rechargeable technology, the batteries would be twice the size and much more complicated to manage. And then, you know, thinking on to some of the scale questions, you know, that kind of came up. On Leo's property, 450 collars that would have to be recharged. The logistics of that sort of process would be very difficult versus replacements. So that's why we've made that choice. Some of our competition has made other choices on that front, but our batteries are not rechargeable.
Are the collars waterproof?
They are supposed to be 100% waterproof, and we're making them better and better. So, you know, in our early designs, waterproofness was a bit of a challenge, and we've made significant strides as we've gone on to our second version of collar. And so I would say we are 99% waterproof right now. But as you know, cows are awfully hard on equipment, and our collars take a beating.
Is it possible to split your fences and have multiple areas on the same property at the same time to utilize different forages?
Absolutely. And so the collars themselves are independent, and they can have up to 16 virtual fences each. And each animal could actually have its own set of virtual fences. In practice, what you would do for your that situation, Herb, would be to set up multiple herds of animals on the property and give them their own sets of virtual fences, manage one set of animals to operate in one portion of the property, perhaps on one particular, you know, species of plant, and set up a separate herd to be able to do something different on a different portion of the property. Did that help?
Yes. What's a practical distance between fences in terms of not having that activity on the electronics? Do they need to be 200 yards apart, or do they need to be 1,000 yards apart?
200 yards, 200 meters is a good number. We this past spring, we did a fuel break experiment with Oregon State, where we created a 200 meter wide by 3 kilometer long fuel break as part of a fire prevention experiment. And 200 meters is a good practical number. The technology can do more precise than that, but going much tighter than 200 meters, you'll run into challenges with GPS accuracy and power consumption on the battery as impacts.
Okay, that's reasonable. Do you have any experience on the herd instinct in terms of one group being able to see another group? How do you have to have a physical separation if you had two groups in different fences?
I would say we don't have a ton of experience with that, but I would say that we have managed separate herds in close proximity. The potential challenge on that front from an animal psychology point of view is the behavior of the animals. And if you had two separate, you know, herds of animals and a subgroup within one of the herd really wanted to be with their buddies because that's what they're used to, that source of pressure, you know, might be difficult for the collars to overcome. And we like to think of the collars as providing a source of pressure to the animals that you get to control, but it is one source of pressure that the animals face. And we think about it like a pressure budget. And so herd draw is one of them. An extreme example of your case would be trying to keep bulls off of cows. And I'm pretty sure that the collars wouldn't do a great job on that.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if you saw that, Leo. Okay.
Go ahead. Tell me the question.
You have to buy the 5 towers. Isn't that right, what you asked? Yeah. Okay. That's what he asked.
The purchase of the tower is the responsibility of the landowner or management program. We bought them through grant funding, and other people are trying to seek grant funding as well, but the rancher is responsible for that tower. One comment is that if you look at the map, remember the map on our, we cover 30 to 40% of a neighbor's property with the towers we have. So there would be some substantial benefit if neighbors could build towers cooperatively, if they all adapt, you know, if a group adopted a grazing region, they could share the cost of those towers potentially, because there's a lot of overreach with the tower.
I would also add to that too, Leo, that, you know, we at Vents are considering, you know, the possibility of other business arrangements for the towers, and, you know, adding a tower lease fee to the collar, and that is something that could happen in the future, as well as, you know, other entities funding it. I think at the start of this discussion, I was talking about what BLM in Colorado happened to be doing in that terrain I was talking about. And in that case, BLM is actually purchasing the towers for the area. I see another question on the battery front. We do have a plan in place for assisting with recycling of those batteries, yes.
Go ahead, Caleb.
What experience or how effective are these on bulls? Do they really keep with the herd, or it kind of coerces them?
We don't have a ton of experience with bulls. We do have most of the work with bulls has actually been done on Jorgensen land and cattle in South Dakota. And, you know, I would say that we have been, it's a finger in the air, 80% effective on the bulls versus the cows. And we've been on young bulls. Part of the challenge there with bulls is twofold. You know, one is the, you know, call it the strength of their personality. And then two is the physical nature of the bull. And on the largest, most mature animals, depending upon the time of year, their necks are bigger than their heads. And collar retention on a bull can be a little more difficult than, say, a cow. And so the other aspect of it is trying to figure out what you want to do with the collar, you know, and the bulls. We have done a couple of experiments with trying to keep bulls in with cows and trying to help keep bulls in separate areas of a pasture from one another, and had some success with that. Another thing that we have done with bulls, and this is not necessarily with virtual fencing, but is using the tracking nature of the collars, because with the collar, you do get a GPS location on the animal. It's programmable in nature. Typically, it's set for every 30 minutes, but we've done some work in Australia with breeding and been able to reduce essentially DNA testing by being able to track the bulls relative to the cows and figuring out which bull was on a particular cow or which subnumber of bulls were on a particular group of cows to help with DNA costs, testing costs. Does that help?
Yep. Thank you.
So Jim Spinner wants to know about the battery life on the towers themselves.
So the towers are solar powered and they are designed to have what's called 5 days of autonomy. So they have marine grade batteries in there and everything is designed with sufficient size of the solar panel and sufficient size of the battery that if you have a 5 day storm, everything keeps on running. The batteries are like any other marine grade battery that they do have a lifespan. Our target is a 3 to 5 year lifespan before those batteries need to be replaced. That is going to be heavily dependent upon the weather environment, particularly the temperature. So the more extreme swing you have in the temperature in your environment, the more stress that's going to put on the battery. And we've been up and running going on past year number two on Leo's property, and everything's been working good so far with him. So I'm confident we're going to hit the 3 year mark with him and maybe then some, despite the how cold it can get in Malta, Montana, though I don't think it's gotten as cold as it can possibly get over the past couple of years.
I also had a question from another producer that could make the call, but I know you said tough terrain they could be used on, but what about like heavily timbered areas?
You know, same answer. It'll work in those heavily timbered areas as well. Again, the collar, you know, will work, you know, without communication to the towers. We are doing work on Forest Service property now, fairly heavily timbered in Colorado as well as northern Nevada. I think a GPS accuracy will degrade a little bit with heavily forested areas, but not to the point where the virtual fence lines will not work. So we're good in the trees.
So one other question, then I'll be done. Can you transfer them to another cow?
Yes, you know, and the collars themselves can move around between different animals, no problem. The one thing that you might want to pay attention to when doing that is potentially the data associated with the collar and the data associated with the cow. And so there's a lot of information that these collars provide. It can be tied specifically to a particular animal if you wish to track that data. So you have information available to be able to look at how did the virtual fencing work on a particular animal and be able to correlate that after the fact with maybe weight gain. or, you know, virility of artificial insemination, or productivity of a bull. And so that's where moving a collar around might actually give you some grief, so to speak, because now you've kind of changed the source of the data. But fundamentally, from a virtual fencing point of view, yeah, you can move the collars around, no problem. And it is just a bookkeeping exercise to make sure you know who's got what and which animals are in which herd when you're looking at them on Herd Manager. There's a question on data from Alex Blake that I can answer. And so the data is, I would say, is co-owned by the rancher and Vents. We retain a level of ownership in that data in order to improve the efficacy of the collars and the performance, you know, of our solution. The rest of the nature of the data, the specifics, are entirely owned by the customer and are secured on a per customer basis. If a rancher wishes to share that data, you know, with research organizations, that is entirely, you know, up to you. And we're actually doing some of that right now. We've got a number of universities that we're working with who are also working with producers and doing research on their property, you know, with their animals, and that data there, you know, is being used for research purposes. In our endeavors with some of the federal agencies that we are working with right now, as well as, you know, the producers associated with them, everybody is extremely sensitive with respect to the ownership of the data and what happens to it. And in all of the cases so far, the federal agencies don't want to see what's going on. They don't want to have direct access to the data. And that is, you know, been exactly how the ranchers would like to see this technology kind of be used at this stage of the game. Hopefully that helps.
So how small a paddocks can you run with this? Can they be like, you know, 12 acres if you're doing like really intensive grazing, or can you only go down so small?
We can go down to about 10 acre paddock size. That's going to be very progressive in terms of power consumption and battery use. The other thing to think about when you look at a grazing scenario with a paddock that small, you can think about it in a single wire paradigm where you're kind of taking one slice of 10 acres and then going to the next slice of 10 acres, and they're very distinct. A better way to potentially use the collars in that scenario, which would be more power efficient, would be instead of having a square of 10 and a square of 10 and a square of 10, you could have a square of 20 that actually creeps over time. And it's not a distinct step, it's actually a creep graze is what it's called. And you can move those boundaries, you know, 10 meters every 4 hours, and you just kind of slide it along and you're moving the animals, you know, through the grass. And so I think when you look at a grass utilization and a regrowth point of view, a creep grazing concept is going to be more effective with a virtual fence approach versus, call it, a hardcore 10-acre cell. And hopefully that makes sense. There is a YouTube video that we've got out where we did a rotational graze with Oklahoma State that did 25-acre pastures, hard cells that rotated through 100-acre pasture, and we went through that twice. And so that's kind of a hardcore, you know, cell-based rotational graze. And we're starting work right now in more of the creep grazing examples.
Boy, just thinking about that, Todd, that opens a whole new realm of possibility in terms of grazing management. It's fascinating to think how you could, basically, then the fence is moving. The fence is programmed to move, and it's just a boundary around the cattle that moves them around wherever you want. That's that's really fascinating. I wanted to go back to the question about data. So at the end of the year, I assume then I could see the color chart and the map and how everything looked visually. I assume that you can also get downloadable Excel type files that and be able to track multiple years. Can you look at multiple years worth of data on one screen, or do you have to swap between years? And what, I guess that would be a whole nother training on the data, the applicability of it, how you can manipulate it and all those kinds of things. But sorry, that's a lot of questions, but
That's a lot of questions in there. So Herd Manager itself is currently set to retain data essentially in perpetuity. And so we don't delete anything. We've really only been in business doing this, you know, for 3.5 years. So eventually there will need to be some management and archival of data. We just haven't hit that just yet. And so you can visualize, you know, all of the data. You know, we can go into Herd Manager and look at what Leo last year, you know, if we wanted to. At that stage, it becomes, you know, how do you manage that? And, you know, how do you make it so that you can actually look from year to year in a sensible manner? And, you know, that to me is a product enhancement that we need to look at is, okay, you know, over the course of a season, what's a good report? And how do we generate that report? What information do you need to see so that now you can make adjustments for, you know, the coming year? What do you need to see year on year? And so there's a lot of opportunity for us to add value there, and certainly something that we're looking forward to doing, not something that we're doing today. You know, we're still trying to make the collars better and get the basics doing. With respect to the data export capability, we do support that today. We are doing that with the university guys. And you, as you can imagine, in a research type of scenario, the way they want to slice and dice the data is much more sophisticated than Herd Manager can do, and likely much more sophisticated than a typical rancher would like to do. So they're pulling all of that data into GIS analysis tools, and now they can layer on top of that satellite imagery with respect to forage, layer on top of that data that they might have with respect to soil health, layer on top of that data that they might be able to gather with respect to carbon sequestration and other things. And so lots of opportunities there. And, you know, we've got hundreds and hundreds of megabytes of data, you know, on Leo's operation that I have not dropped into his inbox because, you know, don't need it just yet. And did I get all of the questions there, Chris?
So do you see Jim Spinner's question in there? Can you explain how the creep graze is more power efficient?
So I think the what we would do on that would be to essentially try and manage the animals less tight and more with sound only versus the electronic stimulus. And so we would allow the animals a little more room to move around, trying to manage them with sound and trying to move this cloud along as they creep graze. And so it's a softer line versus what we would do in a hard 10-acre paddock. And that is where I believe the power efficiency would come about. That said, it's a great observation, Jim, in that we're not going to make it as power efficient as a 500-acre pasture where the animals are inherently not near management zone nearly all of the time. And so that is, even in a creep graze sort of scenario, that is on the lower end of the battery life type of situation.
So then Hugh has a question. Can the towers be made portable?
Our answer to that 6 months ago was no. Our answer to that today is yes, and people are doing it. And my answer to that 6 months from now is I'm going to make it easier for you. But right now, ranchers are doing it on their own. Forest Service is doing it on their own with our support. I eventually think that we will make a solution that is more directly applicable. There are some challenges with making a portable tower. When we talk about it, I like to think of it more as a nomadic tower where it goes from one place to another known place, because we like to be able to predict what your radio coverage is going to be so that you know where you're going to be able to communicate with callers. And we also need to make sure that we have cell phone type of connectivity so that the tower itself can communicate, you know, back to the outside world. And then the third piece is to make sure that the installation is safe and weatherproof. And so the way the current towers are designed right now is they're designed to withstand hurricane force, and they're hard anchored to the ground and designed, you know, to again stick to the ground and suffer through a winter. In a fully portable type of tower approach, we still want to make sure that that is anchored to the ground well. We don't want the wind blowing towers over, destroying solar panels and whatnot. And so one of the things we're looking at with the Forest Service in particular, again, is this nomadic concept where we've got a planned site to put the tower at. It goes up there during the grazing allocation, and for the winter time, it comes down. And then the next season, it goes back to the same spot. We're potentially leaving earth anchors and security materials at the site. So you bring the tower up, potentially on a trailer, tie it into the ground on site, and then next time you might move it on. And hopefully that helps. And that's something we're working on. Everybody asks. There's a couple of questions with respect to grant information and related from Kaylee, you know, with respect to, you know, federal funding. I do think that there are a lot of opportunities, you know, for grants. We are working for, you know, to get conservation innovation grants with the NRCS to improve, you know, habitat restoration. We actually, with Oklahoma State, won a grant with the EPA for riparian area protection. Now, ultimately, I do, you know, it is our hope that virtual fencing becomes part of the toolkit, you know, for use of federal properties, for improving use of the land, for reducing costs associated with use of the land. We are doing a fair bit of work right now with Forest Service to help deal with grazing allocations in areas that have experienced fire. And, you know, fire is a hot topic right now, no pun intended, sorry about that, you know, with what's going on. And we've got a lot of conversations going on in Colorado and Wyoming as to how to use virtual fencing to get grazing allocations back up and running without having to rebuild physical fencing. And that's something that the Forest Service is interested in. BLM is working with us in a lot of places to improve, you know, grazing practices, you know, to help with, again, call it conservation of the land. And then, you know, am I comfortable with giving grant information out? To the extent that it's public, I have no problem, you know, sharing things out. Most things as they become awarded do become public and can facilitate on that. You know, stuff that's pending, I don't think I can quite share, you know, yet. And then I hope that, you know, we'll be improving, you know, Vence's website. It's a little tired right now. We got to put some work into it, but as things get awarded, I do want us to be able to publish that stuff out there and be able to toot our own horn as well as share out information with everybody else.
Thank you guys for doing this for us. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll get a lot more interest in the future. It's a phenomenal idea. So
if anybody wishes to follow up with Vence directly, a couple of email addresses for you, you know, todd@vence.io works for me. josh@vence.io works for our new business development manager, Josh Zimmer, and info@vence.io is kind of a general line into us, and feel free to reach out. And happy to answer questions and start conversations.
Sounds good. Leo, do you have a final word for us?
I do. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk. And then I want to put a plug in for the Phillips County Conservation District. They are hosting the Montana Range Tour the 8th and 9th of September. And the second day, part of the day on the 9th, we will be going on site to the ranch and looking at a tower and some grazing results. And if there's a cow around, we'll get to see a caller. If not, well, you know. So yeah, I would like to invite everybody to that tour. There's a lot of people besides me have put a lot of effort into making that a good program. We'll get to on the 8th. We will spend most of the day at Connie and Craig French, who is the Montana recipients of the Leopold Award this year. So it promises to be an informative 2 days.
Great. Well, I appreciate everybody for turning out tonight. And if you want more information, you can probably get a hold of me and I can get you to the right person or the right contact. So thank you guys very much for tonight.